So this is the second side of session number 17, September 18th, 2006. We're into the series of quotes about ESP, and electronics is ESP, which I organized on page 31 of my book, Fatic Communion with Bob Dobbs. And we did the quote, just finished on side one, electronics is ESP, written by McLuhan. That theme was spelled out by McLuhan in 1957. Now we're looking at a statement made in his 1969 book, Counterblast, page 23. The content of writing is speech, but the content of speech is mental dance, nonverbal ESP. Now, if you're in an environment of electronic mental dance and nonverbal ESP, any relatively mechanical hardware artifact of communication like books, movies, cars, bulldozers, manuscripts, speech, primitive kinds of dances, though they would approximate it. That's like rock and roll. You know, dancing, it approximates the electronic world of mental dance and nonverbal ESP. But we move the nonverbal ESP mental dance with the radio environment. Remember, the radio environment is an instant tactile implosion of the central nervous system of everybody in the world that has a radio environment, and the content is speech. The real effect of radio is not the speech that everybody listens to or the music. It is the tactile rubbing of your central nervous system by the electrified radio acoustic environment. Acoustic space in terms of a simultaneous space, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not the oral content. I guess we could say the difference between oral and auditory, in McLuhan's terms, is auditory is simultaneous. When someone speaks, everybody hears it instantaneously in the realm of being able to hear it. But when you speak, when one speaks, and the simultaneous aspect he calls auditory, but the content part of it he calls oral, O-R-A-L. So you have oral slash auditory, or oral slash audile. Another phrase he had was audile dash tactile. So the simultaneity of speech, that characteristic as a sensory experience is one thing, and that's auditory, whereas speech on the content level, not, you know, the meanings imparted, is called oral. See what I'm saying there?
Yeah. And then so there's a situation where I got you, I'm on the phone, so your voice is in my left ear, I got the TV going on in my right ear, the dogs are going on out in front of me, so there's all kinds of acoustic spaces going on.
Right, but I am not on the phone or on TV, I'm not in your ear, I'm in your central nervous system. We are inside each other with the telephone.
Yeah, because it's electric.
Yeah, and so the speech part, which you align with the sensory organ of the ear, is a puny part of the experience here.
Mm-hmm.
It's minor. So that's why I never say I'm in your ear when I'm talking to someone on the phone. I'm in your brain. I'm inside you, whatever that space is of the central nervous system. And we're still exploring it.
Right.
So the results of that, so the content of speech is mental dance, nonverbal ESP, another way of pointing out the puniness of speech and written and pictorial data. That's why, you know, MTV, and as TV became a, you know, real cliche experience by the 70s, 80s, and 90s, the rapidity of the imagery and the sound bites was an attempt to, for the older speech and pictorial and graphic elements to somehow acquire the instantaneity of ESP, which already existed with tactile electronic medium in its formal aspect. So that's why it's natural for music get faster and faster and faster as it tries to become tactility, but it can't. So actually a part of the flip of the speed up of musical entertainment and fads in the 60s, 70s, 80s is it flipped into speech again, which was rap. But it's a gestural rap. It's a phatic rap, and it has cartoon kind of imagery propping up stereotypes of the chemical body as a ghetto. So I just did a run through the history of ear experience, or what's called music, trying to become tactile. And the only way you can approximate it is to speed up. So the difference between rock and roll and rock and disco and punk, and remember, punk came in, they said, heck with the long songs, we only want to do 3 minutes and three chords, right? It happens faster. Create the acoustic content as fast as possible. The Ramones. So the fads of music over the last 40 years, as I show on my chart, match the effect of the tactile implosion and the attempt by an older sense, the ear, to keep up with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or to interpret that tactility and its instantaneousness is rapidity, but it's not. It's instant. But if a kinetic sense says, no, I can't express instantaneous, instantaneity, then I will express an approximation within my formal dynamic of instantaneity by being more rapid, by being speeded up.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you're listening to fast punk music, you know, fast music, and you're really like listening between the beats, you are listening instant to instant to instant.
Yeah. It's the closest it can approximate. So, now, the other thing about rap is that they overlay the meanings with puns and rhyme. Rhyme enabled them to put in all kinds of different meanings. So they created the verbal form of instantaneity, which is like a page of Finnegan's Wake, cram-packed with levels of information. And you do that by punning or rhyming, you see? So rap was not just speech. It was an attempt by speech. The rap gives up on the instrumental expertise, flips back to the mump, to the mouth, and then attempts to have the mouth say 1,000 lines each second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we then go to the next quote from the book From Cliché to Archetype, came out in 1970. We just quoted from Culture's Our Business, 69. So the next year, McLuhan says this on the theme of ESP. On page 6, he says, "The extremely mobile individual consciousness of the print-oriented man now reverses into the tribal inertia of multi-consciousness." So when you have a point of view and you have a simple linear kinetic and industrial environment, you can go places, and you've got your railroads and coaches and newspapers and all that keeps you mobile around the industrial global village. But once you implode into the radio environment of the 20s, 30s, and 40s, you are multi-leveled in terms of the mixed sensory interplay of speech and graphics, but you have arrived at where you're going instantly, so you end up with tribal inertia. You see? So the simple, single-level individual consciousness of the print-oriented man is going somewheres, on the move, moving up the corporate ladder, extremely mobile. But once you have instantaneity, you have tribal inertia or paralysis, but multi-spinning and baroque spirals. Follow that?
Mm-hmm.
So then the next quote from the same book, From Cliché to Archetype, page 40, McLuhan says, "The new cult of ESP is a natural adjunct to telecommunications. When you put your nervous system outside as a world environment, ESP would seem to be rather plurabelle." Plurabelle's in quotes. Plurabelle is sort of like a reference to the female character in Finnegan's Wake and Olivia Plurabelle. But plurabelle is multi-consciousness, and it's a ringing of a bell, still with an acoustic ear metaphor. But he's saying the cult of ESP, it's people retrieving yoga, acupuncture, all the new age crafts and attempts to do remote viewing and astral projection. All those are attempts by the singular chemical body and its accompanying astral body, singular aspects that was developed in the 19th century and was a fad under Blavatsky and people like that, and later Aleister Crowley and Gurdjieff. All that stuff is replayed by the baby boomers on an instant level, but it's a 19th century attempt to communicate verbal dynamics, and it's almost like an attempt to do mental dance and nonverbal ESP, but it's still within the old parameters of 19th century literate ESP, or the goal of literate man to have instantaneity. So when people went around and tried to have ESP through meditation, they weren't aware that that was retrieved, that desire, by the fact they already lived in an instant ESP environment of electric tactility.
Mm-hmm.
So he's saying that the new cult of ESP is a natural adjunct or effect to telecommunications, but it's not the real ESP of the tactile mixed corporate media environment, which he's getting at with the statement above, electronics is ESP. Not mind-to-mind communications as ESP, that's 19th century. That's a spin-off. It's electronics as ESP.
Yeah. So just for the sake of comparing and contrasting, now Joyce was in 22, well, when he was writing Finnegan's Wake, he was paying attention to the shortwave radio phenomena. Now the guy, just so happens the guy next door to me is a ham radio operator, and I started talking to him about it the other day. And I really got blown away when it really became real for me, the fact, this guy can talk to anybody, anywhere around the world.
Yeah.
He can reach, China, Europe, Japan, Australia, and tune in the voices of people. So when you consider all these voices bouncing around this office.
Slurabell.
Yeah, this multitude of voices, all different languages that are spoken around the world, all simultaneously within the, sphere of electronic space, all talking together like a bunch
of
people.
Like a page of Finnegan's Wake.
Yeah, I'm thinking like a bunch of people in a big crowded auditorium. It's just noise of everybody talking at once, but everybody in all languages. Now, that's a kind of a crowd effect, but
it's a nostalgia effect. Ham radio guys think they're talking to someone in another language. That's the verbal media. That's the content. That's not the real communication that's going on. Anybody who's doing ham radio or even emailing visual messages is canceling out the awareness of the instantaneous non-communication imploded ESP, the intimacy. The very intimacy that would cause the World Trade Centers to collapse, as the whole world looked at the World Trade Center, the heat of that would cause the building itself to commit suicide, which is the real reason that happened, not because of demolition. But I'm just throwing that in now to pique your interest. Let's not get distracted by that.
Well, how far
are ham radio guys doing, talking to a Chinese person? They think that somebody is over in China. No. The whole world, that whole crowd you talk about in the auditorium is inside you. And it's communicating beyond the speech dynamics of each individual language. That's the percept we're trying to make. And if you can look at Finnegan's Wake, he just said, I'll just splash everything on a page, and it'll fail to communicate what I mean, but that is the only way I can point out the instantaneity of electronics ESP. So what did you want to say to that?
So, yeah, the instantaneity, but also there's the effect of the content playing itself out in time and space. And like, for instance, we've got the shortwave radio phenomena, these radio signals bouncing off the ionosphere, and this sort of effect, a collective effect of a crowd of millions of voices, all disembodied voices, all speaking in different tongues at the same time around the planet. And then when we move from shortwave, then what was it? AM radio was the next radio signal to come in?
It was always AM radio, I think. And then FM, then TV came in, and then FM radio came in the late 60s, long after TV and long after the satellite.
Yeah.
FM was around, but it didn't become a big market until...
The ham radio guys were around first, and that's like sideband or something.
Yeah, they were in the teens and 20s.
So how does the collective effect, the collective unconscious effect change as we move, say, from the teens and 20s radio effect to the 30s and 40s AM band radio effect, and then into the, probably was it the 60s or 70s, we got the FM radio band effect?
Yeah, now, if you're dealing with radio, that's the acoustic. Television is more than acoustic. It's eye, foot, and hand. Foot being kinetic, and hand being the tactile part.
Right, which is we can distinguish that from the movie,
yeah.
Which is the eye and the
foot,
eye and the foot and the ear.
Yes. So the 19th century is literate, industrial, and kinetic. Kinetic is the foot. With the telegraph, you have the beginning of the electronic extension of the central nervous system, which is tactile. Yet telegraphs are just point-to-point communication. Yet they're simultaneous while it's going on. Right?
And then there's the collective effect of maybe thousands upon thousands of point-to-point communication all happening at the same time.
Yeah, and a war broke out because of that. The American Civil War was a result of the telegraph.
Mm-hmm.
Historians...
The American Civil War.
Yeah. Because in just before World War I, as the generals getting ready for it in Europe, they studied the dynamics of the railways and the telegraph in the American Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first railway war and telegraph war. So, you know, as McCune says, every new technology will create a hardware war, as well as many wars of the psyche and sociology and crowd behavior, which is the identity quest.
Well, as it causes things to speed up, as we know, thermodynamics, as things speed up, there's more friction, there's more heat, and then...
Right, but remember, it's not... most people talk about the speed up of our life today. It's not speed up, it's paralysis. Remember the quote, tribal inertia of multi-consciousness.
Mm.
Once you have instant communication around the globe with the telegraph, we've all landed in the same spot. And that spot is, sometimes I say it's inside of us, but it's really not inside of the chemical body. It's a new space, what I later call the TV body. It's a new space, a new organ that we're resonating in, which is not measurable with the eye, ear, or foot, or any of those sensory extensions and artifacts, which would be graphics, pictorial, and letters and sound, right? That's all old chemical body content. To deal with the instant ESP, which is not measurable, out of the telegraph. Then, so the global implosion happens, you know, 150 years. We're getting close to 200 years ago now. Anyways, after that, you're going to have spins, mutations, emphasizing one sense or another. Non-tactile, one or another of the non-tactile senses. Or, remember, tactility is not a sense, it's the interplay. So one or two of the other senses will be manifested. So the first one, we could say, is the phonograph. And then comes the telephone. Now, those are in, like, Edison or Bell does the telephone. Edison does the phonograph in the 1870s or something around that period. And then you have the movie in the 1890s. Which is an extension of the eye and the foot, so it's kinetic and it's industrial and kind of literate or photographic, right? Speeded up photography.
And the ear.
And the, well, not yet, but it's silent movies for 20 years before you get into the ear. But it's, so it's basically the eye and the foot. And it's...
Yeah, but it's an acoustic eye.
In the sense, why would you say that?
Because it's not the literate, it's not the eye reading, you know, tearing bits and pieces off the literate page. It's the eye just, you know, gazing at the gestalt on the screen.
That's right. That's the right word, gestalt. That's what I would have said if you didn't say it. And that's where Freudian psychology came in. It was the photograph, and then the movie speeds up the photograph, that allowed people to see human gestures, not literate letters. They saw human gestures and the gestalt of body postures, which made people then start to look at dynamics in groups, and that led to anthropology and sociology before that, but especially for young or a product of the movie era, seeing archetypes in gesture and then relating it to archetypal mental postures. You see what I'm saying?
And dreams.
Yeah, so definitely it's not the literate eye. It's not abstract visual space. It's gestalt pictorial space. It's still eye, but it's immediate.
Mm-hmm.
It's the beginning of virtual reality, which is... virtuality defined as something totally recreating the human sensorium, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which we're getting closer and closer to over the last 150 years. You know, when you can have sex with a hologram image, that's when people say we've arrived, you know,
mm-hmm.
at real virtual reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
So back to the movie is the eye and the hand, and when you say it's acoustic, McLuhan defined the newspaper as acoustic, even though you couldn't hear it. But it was a collection of many book pages caused by the instant communication of telegraph and information from all over the literate publics around the world, made a collage on the newspaper page, and that collage represented the auditory or the instantaneous effect. And you could call that acoustic as opposed to oral. The telephone is oral and acoustic. Acoustic meaning simultaneous, instantaneous, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the movie is eye and it's ear because it moves toward the comprehensive gestalt. Not ear like the newspaper page, but anyways, it's half mechanical, half electronic. And then we break out of that eye-foot thing with total ear, and that's the surface content, and that's the radio. And the radio is point-to-point communication everywhere. It's really not point-to-point communication. It's immediate ESP. It's tribal inertia, paralysis. Everybody's in touch, and the content is the ear. So that's your ham radio. When you get television, you're still within the telegraph, electronic, tactile implosion, but now you're going to get all the senses. You're going to get eye, ear, foot, which is kinetic, and the hand, which is the closest to tactility. It's
yeah.
The ability of the hand, McLuhan would define, it to hold and let go. It's the fact it can let go and have an interval is approximation of the tactile sense, which is the interplay.
Well, I think of it more in the as a metaphor for the fact that you use the hand, you reach, you touch with the hand. And so.
No, that's contact. That's kinetic. Kinetic is contact and pressure. Your feet are tactile in the sense that you step and then you remove the contact. You have a gap and then you step down again.
Yeah.
And you remake contact. It's the contact and letting go, the both, that is tactility. Because tactility is not any one thing. It's the interplay of these situations, these sensory dynamics. So anyways, television is way more comprehensive in its effect than radio. Because it's not just voices. It's the photographic postures, the movie postures, but it's not the mechanical light reflected off the wall of the movie. It's the cathode ray going right into your brain and forcing you to make an image out of the cathode mesh. So that's totally different. So you see...
Different kind of an illumination.
That's right. And it is illumination, whereas movies is reflection. Reflection versus illumination.
Right. Now, I remember somewhere along the line, McLuhan saying that, like, the stained glass windows inside these cathedrals were illumination-like television.
That's light through. Movies is reflection or light on, like light off a book page or light off the wall or screen, which is movie. Television is not light off something. It's not light reflected. It's light through.
Mm-hmm.
It illuminates like electric light bulb. It illuminates the whole space, and it almost doesn't go through you. You're just in the same space as it. And you can't really determine the boundaries of where it begins and ends. Where is electricity? You can't find where it touches, where it begins.
Spirit is often metaphorized as being, you know, light.
Okay, that relates to the quote about the cult of ESP as an adjunct of telecommunications. Telecommunications usually refers to post-satellite technology, but we can say the telegraph is telecommunications. And there have been many books written since McLuhan about the cult of Blavatsky and mediumship that started in Buffalo, Rochester area around 1850s. These women doing mediumship. These were people getting involved with the electric effect and interpreting as astral body spirits. Definitely, the spiritualist movements of the 19th century were complementary with the telephone effect. Okay, so I'm saying now look at the... We can run through.
Well, she didn't consider herself to be like necessarily channeling dead spirits. She felt that she was there was like point to point telegraph between her and some Tibetan guy.
That's right. That was she was doing the telegraph.
She was the receiver on the receiving end.
Point. So she was an effect of the telegraph, which she's in the 1870s and 80s. 20 years after the telegraph, and the telephone's coming in, so she was rearview mirror. She was turning the telegraph effect and anthropomorphizing it into the chemical body and miming the telegraph effect in a spiritual, metaphysical level. Now, she herself was a magician and meant to do tricks and was doing tricks and was surprised that other ectoplasmic effects were coming out of her. She was surprised about her own psychic ability.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't intend it to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a new thing that's never been said before here. She mimed the telegraph as art form. She took the point-to-point effect of telegraph and spiritualized it, archetypalized it, mm-hmm. back into astral body or chemical body metaphors, right?
Right.
Okay, so I want to say that the dynamic of enough completed imagery in a repository, because anybody in the latter part of the 20th century has all kinds of images that's picked up through the years. So I can just cite a few points. What comes in with the telegraph and the movie? Someone like Oscar Wilde, George Bernard Shaw. What comes in with radio? Pound, Elliot, Wyndham Lewis, James Joyce. Politically, FDR, Hitler, Churchill. What comes in with television? JFK, Elvis Presley bringing in the Southern music, because television evoked the Southern music and killed the popularity of jazz, which was more in the radio era as a musical resonance. And then you get into the computer satellite era, and you have mixed corporate media, you get psychedelic mixed corporate media music, light shows. So, and then you have individual autonomy by the counterculture. So we've just run through a bunch of cultural images. We could go into art and go through the changes from the telegraph up to now. Each new art movement resonating with the medium that was coming or soon to be or was there. Jackson Pollock, abstract expressionism, an expression of television. Cubism represented the movie phase or the telegraph mosaic, looking at things from multiple points of view. That's what the telegraph newspaper reader got. It got many literate publics on its page. That collage is like cubist.
And Einstein was contemporary with the cubists?
Yes, he was taking light, or visual Newtonian space, and bending it. He was starting, McCone said, he made it sculptural, which is sculpture is with the hand, and so approximating tactility. He was trying to express tactile in the mathematical physical legacy of visual space.
Mm-hmm.
Light is curved. What else did he say? Relativity of multiple points of view, or something was constant.
Space curved. Light. Space-time is curved.
Big pardon?
Fabric of space is curved.
Yes, but the thing is, when he talks about light being the speed of light being the constant, really, it was tactility that was the constant, but he, being a visually biased mathematician, called it visual space light. But it was the only constant as among relative observers was, in fact, environmentally, the electronic effect of instant tactility, the electronic, what Teilhard de Chardin called a biological event. The simultaneity was the constant, the electric environments from the telegraph up to the satellite, but it meant every culture was instantly in touch with each other, and the idea of cultural relativism or relativistic views to each other comes in that, because that's the only way you can translate the older graphic or verbal media in relation to instantaneous electronic ESP, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can look at all the developments in science, art, and culture, and studies, and academia, and sports, and they all have sensory dynamics, what McCune called the profile of the crowd, matching with the electronic media of its era.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting we get existentialism with radio and movies.
Yes.
With television is coming up as the hidden ground. I think that existentialism would be closer related to TV than to movies.
Well, what is existentialism? It begins with Kierkegaard, who in 1844 published the concept of dread and the beginning of the metaphor of the age of anxiety. He did that the year of the telegraph, 1844. And so he was the forerunner within the technical discipline of philosophy. He was the beginning of existentialism. And then you had Nietzsche, beyond good and evil, beyond literate left hemisphere value judgments, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you get into Heidegger and Sartre and what we know in the 20th century as existentialists, they are, and McCune writes about Heidegger in Laws of Media. You might want to look at that. But he says, Sartre and Heidegger are beginning to look at percept. They know that abstract, literate, left-hemisphere visual space concepts don't keep up with the electronic simultaneity. So they start talking about percept, or as Sartre would say, entering into experience and allowing it to massage you without value judgments thrown in there, or not assuming that your value judgments will control or illuminate the experience. It was existentialism is an intuition of moving into the world of direct percept and inability of previous cultures and its value systems or older verbal pictorial media to evaluate what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So existentialism is a product of the electric age, not TV or radio. It comes with Kierkegaard and the telegraph, and it's developed by each generation. for the next 100 years, all wrestling the new post-concept fact of electric ESP, which McLuhan called handling percepts.
Yeah. It isn't until television that we get into psychedelics and kaleidoscopes, which is kind of pure percept. I mean, now we're really out of the visual
space. Oh, this is a good point. Existentialism is like the last written philosophy, and it's saying, hey, I'm just getting nausea.
Wow.
It's the famous Sartre book. But the thing is, it's about the failure of concept to deal with the electric percept effect. But it's still dealing with singular book-written consciousness. When you get to television psychedelic stuff, then you get into multi-percepts, cultural perceptual relativism, or what we already quoted, multi-consciousness. Right?
Yeah.
The existentialism of multi-consciousness is the 60s, whereas of the 30s and 40s of Sartrean existentialism, it's the percept of print consciousness, still within the print or the literate effect.
And it's interesting how it goes from print to black and white TV, then into color TV. There's that transition where even the TV has that bookish effect.
Yes, and McLuhan said that color was tactile. It was not visual. Color TV was tactile because it accentuated the central part of the eyeball and not the edges of the eyeball of peripheral vision. Black and white exaggerated peripheral vision, and he said that's why tennis came in. Was popular in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, even in the 20s. That was the effect of the car, peripheral vision. People started to drive, and they had their peripheral vision. You know, Victorians didn't have that. They had single tunnel vision of literate newspaper people, newspaper reading people. So you have the car bringing in peripheral vision, kinetic space, and that brings in tennis and golf of the 20s, 30s, 40s. But then when color television comes in, and it affects the central macula of the eye, it creates a paralysis, and people don't move around exaggerating sports of their peripheral vision. They start throwing frisbees or sitting there listening to music and getting stoned and exploring proprioceptive inner space or multisensory consciousness, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could just line up the pictures of fads. You have the flappers, was it, and the jazz age. McLuhan used to talk about the black bottom of the 20s was updated by the white bottom of the 60s. The white bottom was the white Anglo-Saxon majority race of America going to Woodstock and taking their clothes off, where it was more aligned with the black culture and jazz in the 20s and 30s. So the black bottom of the 20s became the white bottom of the 60s.
TV retrieved the black sensibility, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Within music, you have jazz, which was basically black produced, and as McLuhan said, it was the first global Esperanto. It was the one culture, one language that united the whole global village. And then the irony was, he said in the 60s, the white literate establishment wanted to integrate the black subculture into old literate modes. But why should we integrate them back into an older medium when they had already integrated the whole world with jazz? But then you bring in television. That's a whole dynamic than the resonance of jazz with the radio effect. And with the TV grainy effect, you bring in Southern music. You bring in the black image. And so then you have what's called R&B in the 50s, which the jazz musicians thought was just surface music. And then you have John Lennon saying, when the Beatles phase, saying, we like rock and roll, jazz is too fast. I can't remember the exact, the jazz musician, he says, play too fast. It's like the lyrics in one of those early Beatles songs. But you have a movement to R&B, and then doo-wop, and then soul, and you have a whole commercial, I don't know how you'd say, is it like black culture? It's like the identity of jazz with the black race becomes erased in the 50s and 60s, where the TV generation is now totally tribalized, more than their radio parents were, and they are all immediately black, and therefore the black race records, it was called, and the isolated black music industry was able to cross over and become content for the baby boomers.
Motown.
Yeah, Motown. It was like, you could say from the traditional black purists, jazz musicians, it was made into cottage cheese or Swiss cheese. But the rhythms of it, they had to be faster. 3 minutes was a speeded-up lifestyle. You couldn't sit around for long jazz solos. And so in the 60s, the black voice, the Supremes, and the whole black culture sanitized for a global audience just became the greatest music ever for the global village, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when computers and that came in the 70s, the rhythms changed, and the Italians took over with John Travolta and disco and put the R&B black successful Aretha Franklin world and Motown out of business. I used to hear him on the radio and hear complaints when I was living in Canada on the news show they had on every night called As It Happens. I remember hearing James Brown and various biggies of the 60s complaining that the clubs had become, they said, racist because they wouldn't play black music anymore. That's because the disco took over. And the disco was a whole other thing. I'm saying it's Italian because of John Travolta in the movie, but it was a mixed corporate media effect. It was dancing around the global satellite. The disco ball was an image of everybody dancing around the satellite. And that was part of the environment. It was an environmental music.
That would have been 70s?
Oh, yeah, that was 76, 77, 78, 79. Studio 54 is like in its peak era, 77 to 80.
Yeah.
That's on my chart in the Croker Quadrant.
Dancing around the global satellite.
Yeah, and because we were getting, the satellite was the planetary proscenium arch of the 60s was shrinking under the digital android meme technology of the 70s. Therefore, people were becoming bigger than the satellite global theater, and the satellite shrunk to become a little crystalline, mirror-reflecting disco ball, and everybody was dancing free and being intergalactic.
How come we didn't... What happened to the rhythm and blues under disco conditions?
It disappeared, and you know how it got retrieved? Slightly retrieved. It never totally got retrieved because punk and new wave came in. The blacks have had a hard time until they developed rap.
Yeah.
But you know what happened? You know what retrieved its... Well, the nostalgic expression of the death of black music of the 50s and 60s was the Blues Brothers. Came out in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
79, 80, I think, is when that movie came out. And that was a retrieval for the baby boomers, because now the punk and the next Generation X were taking over in the music industry. Sex Pistols and all that. The retrieval for the baby boomers, who, you know, they're 35, 40 by 1979, and they are nostalgic for the black music of the 50s, 60s, so it was crystallized in the movie Blues Brothers.
Two white comedians?
Yeah. Lots of layers of put-on in there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is the multimedia, multi-relativity of super irony that happens to every culture in the world when you have the clash of all these different media environments in the 60s and 70s under the satellite effect. McLuhan said that it created the highest decibels of consciousness because nobody in any particular culture could totally identify with the hypnotism and programming of their own particular culture because they're already discarnate and interacting with cultures all over the world and other media dynamics. Get it?
Mm-hmm.
So let's look, let's take this quote here, which fits. The next quote, which is from McLuhan's famous Playboy interview, here you'll see him talking about what I just said. McLuhan says, electricity makes possible, and not in the distant future either, he says, an amplification of human consciousness on a world scale without any verbalization at all. He's saying what I was trying to tell you, that with the radio environment, speech is the content. It's not the real effect. So the Playboy guy goes, are you talking about global telepathy? McLuhan says, precisely. Now, he knows that they're thinking in terms of 19th century ideas of mind-to-mind melting, 19th century version of Blavatsky's ESP, but it's way beyond what mind-to-mind ESP. It's collective group mind ESP. It's even beyond group mind. It's a TV body. It's psychedelic or even fractal. So McLuhan says, the guy says, are you talking about global telepathy? He says, precisely. Already computers offer the potential of instantaneous translation of any code or language into any other code or language. Now there's the ESP for collective media, the instant translation of anything into anything else. That's what we have with the internet. It's not just mind-to-mind, it's ESP between media environments. So you have one language, one code being translated instantly by computer into another language or code. So it's like ESP among the machine's parts or the android meme. So you see, the cult of ESP, as we have in the quote above, is anthropomorphic chemical body desire for ESP, point-to-point matching, which is remote viewing or Madame Blavatsky.
But maybe possibly a refinement that may happen in the future.
What is a refinement?
I'm saying that may be a refinement that may occur in the future.
Well, that is the
fine. We think of.
No, that would happen. We will turn the chemical body and the astral body into art forms as content of the global ESP among the parts of the android meme. Because he's describing ESP between machines here.
Yeah.
He says already computers offer the potential. See, the guy goes global telepathy. You're talking about global telepathy, and we know what people thought back then telepathy was. Mind-to-mind, instant communication.
Yeah, it didn't have anything to do with machines either.
That's right. Nobody thought there's a machine. So McClellan looks like a total machine fascist here. People thought he was a nut. You ask him about telepathy, and he doesn't seem to stay on topic. He starts talking about machines translating each other. Well, we now have the advantage of our experience of the last 40 years, and we see he was more accurate than what anybody thought he was saying.
Yeah.
He says, already computers offer the potential of instantaneous translation of any coder language into any other coder language. If a data feedback is possible through the computer, why not a feed forward, or anticipation, I would translate that as, why not a feed forward of thought whereby a world consciousness links into a world computer? That's the Matrix.
Mm, wow. When did he say that?
1968.
Jeez.
Because, you know, the interview came out in March 69, and we're quoting from page 72 of that particular Playboy magazine. Now, this got republished in the book mid-90s called Essential McLuhan. You can read the Playboy article there, and that came out after I made this book, and it's on a different page in that book. But that's how you can get it easily. Just get the book Essential McLuhan. You don't have to go get an old copy of Playboy magazine. But it was done in 68, came out in the March 69 issue. But I was told that McLuhan, the guy would ask questions, and McLuhan would answer them, and the guy wouldn't understand what McLuhan was saying. So it came down to the guy said, I'll ask you the questions, you write out the answer. He wrote out the answers. So people, when they read the interview, they thought this amazing brain was saying these things off the top of his mind, you know. But most of it was written. And that was the only way the guy could get a handle on what McLuhan was saying when they originally were talking.
Mm-hmm.
So the next quote from the book Cultures Are Business, which
so what the guy gave him the questions and he took them home, wrote out the answers and sent them back.
Yeah, because it was getting so bad that they didn't think they were going to be able to publish the interview. It just the
yeah.
guy, his name was Eric Norton, he just couldn't understand McLuhan and didn't know how to make it into a published thing for Hugh Hefner.
Right.
So McLuhan wrote it.
Well, some people
he probably said some of it and then he added. He wrote in clarifications and added to it.
Mm-hmm. Some people felt McLuhan was intentionally
science fiction. They had all kinds of rearview mirror projections of odd.
Attempting to be what's the word? Obtuse.
Yeah. And he wasn't. He was talking directly. But of course, nobody could see the present. You got to be a quote genius to see the present. You got to be unique. You got to have years of extra study.
Yeah.
But we in the Secret Council of 10, so the government understood this. So that was our experience. We lived on that level.
So I'm just wondering what emotional consequences that impact has, you know, on the nervous system to be that conscious of a situation that's really not all that pretty.
I know. What happens is, first of all, he started picking up in the late 30s, so he converted to Catholicism. That gave his mind rest. Then as he developed his abilities of perceiving the present in the 40s, first problem was he had a serious gallbladder disease. He was ill from 46 to 51. You can read that in his letters. So I laid out this pattern. When a new technology comes in, McLuhan gets sick. So TV's coming in the late 40s and early 50s. He's sick. The next time, you have satellites coming in the late 50s and early 60s. McLuhan gets so sick, he almost dies in the surgery.
Oh, my God.
Okay? And then the satellite environment dies in the late 60s, and you bring in instant replay in the beginning of the digital android meme. He gets sick again and has the longest brain surgery ever done to a human being up to that point. 21 and a half hours, or rounded off to 22 hours, in a New York hospital. And they found a benign tumor. And then he has a neck problem, which almost kills him in 72, but it just decomposed, just disappeared. What's the word? Remission. Went into remission just before surgery, and McLuhan had all these nuns praying for him, so he thought the nuns did it. So anyways, he had that problem, and if you look at my chart, the Croker period begins in 72 and goes to 77, the ending of the Thompson quadrant from 67 to 72. So in 72, there's transition into a more instant replay and digital stuff, so McLuhan gets sick. And then he has a heart problem, gets sick in 76, and then when the Android meme becomes full-blown in 1980 and Reagan's coming in, he dies.
And
so every time there was a new technology, he got affected. He was, like, hypersensitive.
And Bob's going through all these transitions, and he never gets sick. How do you figure that?
Well, I had Connie, and I had the D-cell, and I wasn't a regular meat-eating jerk, you know? I wasn't just a vegan, but, I mean, I don't even eat food now. I inject food. And what I mean by that is I do preventive eating, you know, powders and Zango juice, and I don't have much of a normal solid diet.
Mm-hmm.
So I lived, I was not a conventional person in the way I use my body. McLuhan was conventional. The People magazine, he was semi-conventional. People magazine did an article on him in 75, 76, and someone wrote in and commented on the report on the diet. The author, the woman, said that he ate, for breakfast he had organic bread and a piece of meat. That was his breakfast. And so someone wrote in, yeah, typical McLuhan wackiness, half organic and half normal, you know,
yeah.
Organic bread and a piece of meat.
Right.
So, but that was, you know, people, that was a hot mechanical environment in the 20s and 30s and 40s, and people grew up with meat and hardware food. Once we got into the TV and satellite environment, people became more discarnate, and they started eating lighter. McLuhan even predicted that vegetarians would...